This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Toyota not sending executives to the Olympics. For Marketplace in Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler and for David Brancaccio. First, we have a new report highlighting just how unaffordable rents have become for low-wage workers across a lot of the U.S. Finance experts recommend spending no more than a third of income on housing expenses, but according to the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, that's impossible for many minimum wage workers. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Researchers compared federal data on rents nationwide to local minimum wages. For a minimum wage earner who works full-time, a two-bedroom rental is out of reach in every state, says report co-author Dan Threet.
These workers provide invaluable services for our society, but they're not making wages that will actually allow them to afford homes in their area.
He says the disparity is the worst in California cities, where minimum wage is at least $14 an hour. Yet a worker earning that amount in San Francisco would need the equivalent of nearly five full-time jobs to afford a two-bedroom rental. But it's not only pricey coastal cities that are unaffordable, says Richard Green at the University of Southern California.
You have places where it's the cost of the housing, and then you have the places where it's people don't make any money.
He says two things are playing out in different ways across the country. Housing shortages drive prices higher, and minimum wages don't always keep pace. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
One of the biggest sponsors of the Tokyo Olympics, the Japanese carmaker Toyota, says its executives aren't going to attend the game's opening ceremony on Friday due to rising coronavirus cases. Now, polls show a majority of people in Japan actually don't want the competition to take place. The BBC's Alex Capstick is in Tokyo.
As one of the IOC's biggest sponsors, Toyota plows millions of dollars into the Olympic movement. But despite all of their financial support, the company has decided it's wrong to attend an opening ceremony where fans have been barred because of rising COVID cases. The company has also decided not to run any games-related adverts on Japanese television, although they will be shown abroad. In May, a leading official from the car giant said they were conflicted over the best course of action amid concerns that the games were taking place.
The BBC's Alex Capstick.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Late last week, the European Union rolled out an ambitious climate change mitigation agenda, one that included a carbon border tax. Now, that would be the first of its kind, and is basically a fee on planet-warming carbon embedded in goods produced outside the 27-member bloc. Scott Barrett is a professor of natural resource economics at Columbia University, and he joins me now to discuss what this means. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm curious, from your perspective, this idea of implementing climate change initiatives, implementing sort of the idea that we have to face climate change and the realities, and putting them into things like trade deals, is this novel? Is it a new idea? Sort of how did this come about?
The idea has been kicking around a long time, and it's actually come up in the climate negotiations before, but never carried further. But it has come up before. It appeared in U.S. legislation, the so-called Waxman-Markey bill, incorporated an element of this very similar to the EU proposal. And Europe itself adopted something like this for one sector, for international aviation, some years ago. But that was never fully implemented, or to put it differently, it was they backed off from it when there was a threat of retaliation by other countries.
There's also, we've talked about this 100 times on Marketplace, but sort of the idea of a market opportunity here for countries. If you get out in front, I mean, China has been pretty explicit about getting out in front of the idea of clean energy and renewables and things like that. There are economic benefits to being sort of the first out there, right?
There are benefits potentially, provided you get this transformation worldwide. So in other words, it has to be the case that the markets are changing everywhere. Because then the countries that move early to develop the technologies will find markets. So you're playing this delicate game where on the one hand, you're trying to push out to urge the rest of the world to go, and you're hoping you're going to gain from that. But what happens if the rest of the world doesn't join you? And that's what's been going on for about 30 years. This is partly what they're trying to get at with this measure, but there are actually other ways in which they might push it even further. But that really should be handled much more at the multilateral level. So I think another implication of this is that we may need to rethink how we negotiate agreements like the Paris Agreement to bring in measures like this that are negotiated and therefore agreed by the different countries, but that really propel action globally to address this great threat.
These are proposals. These certainly aren't laws. You're going to have cases in front of the WTO, I would imagine, arguments of protectionism. Do we have a timeline idea of how this sort of plays out? You talked about 30 years of dealing with this. Is that, I hope that's not what we're looking at.
I don't think it is. I think Europe is going to be moving forward with this. They have a lot to work out. They have their own internal negotiations to sort out. But I think they're going to want to move forward with this. Now, as they do, we'll have to see how other countries respond as well. And as we did, we saw this played out before with the aviation directive. So this is basically the first shot across the bow. But I do think that no one can really accept the status quo ante because that's been ineffective. And I think it is really inevitable that any serious action on climate change is going to have to link with trade. It's just finding the way to link trade and climate that is not disruptive to trade, does not damage relations among countries, and does address the collective action problem of getting countries to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions.
Scott Barrett is professor of natural resource economics at Columbia University. Scott, thanks again for doing this.
Oh, thank you very much.
And Spain said it's building an urban forest around Madrid to try to help collect greenhouse gases as well. I'm Andy Euler with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.